Okay, as we bid farewell to the Mishkan, we bid farewell to the Pashas that discuss the Mishkan. So I think one of the things every year we think about, you know, on the one hand, you know, you're going to go through more measurements this Shabbos, listening to the Kriyas HaTorah, more just pretty much repetition of Bekudei of what happened in Tetzaveh. And we yearn for those times that we had a Beis HaMikdash, that we had a Mishkan, that we had a place that you could really feel Hashem's presence. Maybe we'll talk, as we leave the Mishkan, talk about some of those longings and feelings and desires that we have, and to hope that through our studying about the Mishkan, Beis HaMikdash, and appreciating it, of course, next week we'll be in Vayikra, we'll start talking about the Karbanos, and we'll see about the Ksav HaKabbalah's take on that, but we should always be longing and yearning for those times. Now, the very first piece, this is really the main piece of the week, is the first piece. So after finishing the discussion of the gold and the silver and the Big Day Kahuna, right, this week we talk about the Big Day Kahuna, so you could take a look at if you look, there's a number of psukim that sort of summarize everything we've been talking about. So start on page 283, the bottom line, Vatechel kol avodas mishkan ol moed, so all the work was done. Ayasu b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe k'inasu. The b'nei Yisrael did all that Hashem commanded Moshe. Interesting, it says b'nei Yisrael did it. I thought really Bezalel was the one who did it. I just saw the Aruch Chaim has an idea on that somehow even though only a few people did it, since the whole community provided the background and the support, the backdrop, it was as if the whole community did it, even though only the leaders are. The job of the community sometimes is to foster an environment where the leadership is able to function. But anyway, so they brought the Mishkan to Moshe. Mishkan El Moshe, and they brought the Mikzeh Arum, or the Arum, the Shulchan, the Menorah, the Mizbech. They brought everything. Take a look at the last pasuk in the Perek Lamed Tes. Vayar Moshe Kol Hamelacha. Moshe saw all the work, and they Vehine Asu Asak Hashem Tziva Hashem Kein Asu Vayivarach Osa Moshe. He blessed them. Famous line, which the Ksav HaKabbalah has nothing to say about, but a famous line, Pasuk Mem Gimel, Rashi says, Yehi ratzon shetishra shechina b'maseh yedecha v'hinoam Hashem alokeinu aleinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to bless it. Hopefully, now that we did all the work, you got to hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence actually comes into it. They didn't know what was going to happen. They built it. If you build it, he will come, hopefully, but they were davening he should come. Fine. Here we get to the main point of the Ksav HaKabbalah for this week, which is a very beautiful idea. So here you have it like this. Watch this. So you have Perek Mem goes like this. God clearly commands Moshe, you should build the Mishkan. You should be the one putting it up. Fine, do it like this. Put the Mizbeach, the Kiyar, everything. So then what do you have? Pasuk Tezayin. At the end of the Aliyah, Vayas Moshe kechol asher tziva Hashem also kein asa. Well, God commanded Moshe to put the Mishkan, so the pasuk says, and Moshe did it. So then, the next pasuk, Vayhi b'chodesh arishon b'shana hashenis be'echad l'chodesh. I'm in Perek Mem pasuk Yud Zayin on page 285. Vayhi b'chodesh arishon b'shana hashenis be'echad. It was in the first month of the second year, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Be'echad HaChodesh, Hukam HaMishkan. The Mishkan got built. And then the next pasuk, Vayakim Moshe Es HaMishkan. So, Hukam HaMishkan sounds like it just happened. It got put up. Hukam is in the Huf'al form of the verb. It happened. Then the next pasuk you have, Vayakim Moshe Es HaMishkan. So, the Ksav HaKabbalah relates to this issue, and he says a very, very beautiful idea, which I think is a very, very important idea for us to think about. It has to do with how much do we do and how much does Hashem do in the world? What's supposed to be our perspective about that? So let's take a look at this first piece. This is really the main piece of this week. Hukam HaMishkan. So Rashi quotes, take a look at Rashi. Oh, we, I don't know. We don't have the Rashi here. I don't see us having this Rashi. Interesting. Quotes a Rashi, but I don't know. I don't know. I thought it doesn't say. Doesn't say anywhere. It's a Gemara that I know. It's, I know it's a Gemara. We'll see in a minute. It's a Gemara. Where's the Gemara? Oh, hold on 1 second. Here it is. It is in Rashi. Okay, let's take a look. Take a look at the Rashi and Lamed Gimel. I think that's where it is. Rashi and Lamed Gimel. Right on the pasuk, they brought the Mishkan to Moshe. Vayaviyu said they brought the Mishkan to Moshe. Take a look at Rashi on page 284. Shelo hayu yicholin lahakimo. They couldn't do it. Bezalel and his henchmen were not able to put up the Mishkan. They built all the camp. They weren't able to do it. Ulufi shelo asa Moshe shum malacha b'mishkan. Since Moshe was not at all involved in the preparations for the Mishkan, hiniach lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu akamaso. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to be the one. Moshe was going to have the honor of putting up the Mishkan. Shelo haya yachal lahakimo shum adam machmas koved hakroshim. It was very heavy. She'en koch ba'adam lezakvan. Umoshe ha'amidan. It was too heavy for anybody to put them up, but Moshe Rabbeinu was the only person in all of Klal Yisrael that had the strength to put up the Mishkan with the Kerushim. Amar Moshe l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eich efshar akamaso ayidei adam. Moshe asked Hashem, this is too difficult. How is any human being going to be able to put up the Mishkan? Amalei, asok ata biyadcha. You should just make like you're doing it. You should just, you know, go through the motions of picking it up. Nira kemakimo, it will look like you are putting it up. Vahu nizkaf v'kamei elav. And it's going to actually stand up and get put up by itself. V'zeo shenemar, hukam ha-mishkan, hukam me'elav. And that is what's meant by the words, Hukam HaMishkan, it's going to happen by itself. In other words, Hashem and Moshe were involved in a charade, in a skit, in a play. This is like a movie. It was like a... So Hashem said, you fake everybody out, make it look like you're doing it, and I'll take care of it from behind. Very strange. Very strange. Medrash Rebbe Tanchuma. Oh, so that's what the Ksav HaKavod is talking about. So let's take a look. Hukam HaMishkan, Herbie, we got a good seat for you right over here. Okay, you got to bring your own chair, Herbie. Okay.
B-Y-O-C.
Bring your own chair. Okay. Hukam HaMishkan, Rashi Mei Razal. Razal is Chazal, Rabbi Seinu. Vadvar Mechusre Havana Lebalei HaLashon HaAchronim. This is very difficult to understand. Hukam HaMishkan. So he explains like this. Amnam, achareisha yadano askamas das kol goni halashon. Again, one of the reasons why the Ksav HaKavod doesn't have all that much to say in this parasha is because most of what he's talking about is like diktuk. He's talking about diktuk, and I didn't think you woke up at 7 in the morning to listen to a diktuk. But the truth is, what I like to think, and what I've been trying to do in the Ksav HaKavod is to in the diktuk to explain some profound ideas, and I think there is a very profound idea in the diktuk here. Omnam, achareisha yadano askamas das kol goni haloshna kadmona madvar mevarim heite. But if you understand the balei diktuk, so then you can understand exactly what's going on over here. Ki amru, bavur shematzanu tevos ma'atos b'mirko sheba'u almanas poel v'hufal. There are a number of words that are presented in this way, kimo, ovad lokach notash, or lukach nutash yutan, v'lo matzasi poel bebinyan piel. Okay, I don't know exactly what he's talking about here, but we'll get to it in a second. You'll see in a second what he's talking about. Ki lo nimtza b'mikra lo ovad lokach notash ozav notan, lochein ein hapoel v'hahufal binyanim la'atzmam, Aval heim nilkocha me'achirim, hamorim ala pol behem nedar. again, he'll explain in a minute what he's talking about. Lachein la'olam einam morim al ha'asos ha'inyan mitzad ha'poel ki im mitzad ha'pa'olos l'chuda. He's saying like this, that there are a number of formulations of certain words where the reason they're formulated the way they are is because the focus is not on who did them, but the focus is on the fact that they got done, as you're going to see in a second. Ki im mitzad ha'pa'olos l'chuda mibli shamashkaf al ha'poel. We don't care who was the one who did the action. We care that the fact that the action got done. Uchi'ilu ha'pu'ula ne'esasa me'eleha. And it is as if the action got done by itself. Mibli shum siba po'eles. Without any person doing the action. Ki'ein liba osikba. Because we don't care about that. Lochein hunach aleihem shelo nizkar shem po'alam. And therefore, it doesn't mention who did it. Like in this case, it just says, Hukama Mishkan. The Mishkan got built. It doesn't say who did it. Now hold on. It does say who did it. So he's going to explain that. Kilo Purash Bahem Hapuel. It's not explained, Hapoel, the one who did it. Umiderech HaKosov Shelo Lishdamesh Bibinyanim Eila Kiim Bimokum Shelo Chash HaKosov Laskira Mibli Toelas Behodata Lefi Shehaikar Besipor Hu Inyan Ha Hipalus Levado. The main point of the story is the fact that the Mishkan got built and not the person doing it. If you find sometimes the Torah using a word and it doesn't say who did it, it just says it got done. Even though we know who did it, you have to ask yourself, why did the Torah write it that way? There's a reason. In our case, it's explicit in the Torah who's the one who did it. It says in the beginning of the parak, Hashem tells Moshe, you should do it. And here it says the Mishkan got built. It's extra. Because in the very next pasuk it says that Moshe himself built it. So these words, Hukama Mishkan, are extra. It said in the beginning of the parak, God said to Moshe, build a Mishkan. And in the very next pasuk it says, Moshe built the Mishkan. So why does it stick in a pasuk in the middle that the Mishkan got built by itself? Hukama Mishkan. Lachein vadai, therefore, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, this is what prompted our rabbis to say, hey, the Torah is trying to teach us something over here by saying the Mishkan got built by itself. Hukama Mishkan. Lachein vadai, lidrashaba. This extra words, we know who built the Mishkan. Moshe built the Mishkan. So why do you have the extra pasuk Hukam HaMishkan, that the Mishkan just got built without saying who built it? Lachin vada lidrash haba lahodienu ki be'emes Hukam HaMishkan v'hainu shehu nizkaf v'kam me'ilav, that the Mishkan actually became stood up and was built by itself. Kimashmos horas milas Hukam, like is the implication of the word Hukam, it was built. Hamore al ha hipa'alus me'elav, on the fact that the act of building the Mishkan was done by itself, ka'amur. Umoshe lo hayakim nira kimakimo. It only looked like Moshe was building it, but in reality, it got built by itself. V'niskaimu b'zeh shtei ha'lishonos. And therefore, we could be mekayim both languages. Hukam ha'mishkan, vayaka Moshe. Moshe made like he was doing it, but it happened by itself. And we find the same kind of thing in a number of other places in Chumash. Lahoros lanu agav milosehem, to teach us through the words in yanim nistarim bilti mufarashim, hidden ideas that are not explained. V'chein miderech hanavua, v'chein miderech hachachma uchumama shlomo lahavin mashal malitz devircha mechidosa. Stop. What's the message over here? So I was thinking that the message over here is, particularly when we talk about holy buildings, like building yeshivas, building shuls, building the Mishkan, building the Beis HaMikdash, So we think it's us who are building it. We think we're the ones putting in the effort and the energy and building it. In reality, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu building these things. In reality, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And maybe that was the lesson that he was trying to teach Moshe Rabbeinu. You just have to put in the effort. You have to put in the effort. At the end of the day, it's going to be me who's going to make this Beis HaMikdash happen. And that's true. That's certainly true in the Beis HaMikdash, certainly true in the Mishkan. But it's true also, perhaps we can understand, it's true in all spiritual endeavors. It's true in all spiritual endeavors. How many times have we seen that it just requires a little bit of effort on behalf of a person, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes that little bit of effort and makes it go a lot longer way. When it comes to spiritual matters, that's the way spiritual matters work. A person first has to take a step, he has to make like he's doing, and he's putting in the energy and the effort, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it to a place way beyond that you could have thought it was going to go. So maybe that's the lesson. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the Mishkan in such a way. Moshe, you gotta go through the motions. Vayakam Moshe es haMishkan. To all of Klal Yisrael, it looked like Moshe did it because Moshe had to put in the effort. And once Moshe put in the effort, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to reward his actions with so much more. And I've said in this shiur so many times over the years, and last night was no exception, that sometimes I'm sitting down to prepare and it's not going. There's nothing happening. You know, I'm reading and reading and there's nothing exciting, and I'm reading and learning, and then all of a sudden, like just when you're ready to give up and say, oh well, maybe no one's going to come to the shiur anymore because I'm going to come tomorrow, I have nothing to say, all of a sudden you're ready to go to sleep, you're ready to give up, and boom, something comes in. It's not because of anything I did. I just put in the effort, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it just looked like I was preparing the shiur. It just looked like I was putting in the effort, but in reality, it's the Rabbeinu Shlomo who puts in the results, and we've talked about this.
That's
exactly.
What it says.
Exactly. Exactly. And we've talked about this many times over the years. And that's the way we have to think about the money that we make. It's the way we have to think about the successes in our lives. That's the way we're supposed to think about these things. We're supposed to think about them is that we put in the effort, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the reward. But here you have it in the Hukam HaMishkan. Hukam HaMishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu just made it look like it. It's a little funny that Rashi seems to say, though, that Hashem was, you know, sort of was rewarding Moshe. That Moshe didn't have a chelik in the building of the Mishkan, but he was so close to him, he was the leader of Klal Yisrael, so he says, listen, I'm going to give you the kavod. I'm gonna make it look like you're putting it up. So you just, you know, we'll have a little teamwork here. You go through the motions and I'll make it happen by itself. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was a little bit strange, but it sounds like, again, the lesson is that Moshe Rabbeinu sweated over Klal Yisrael. He's the one who put up with a lot of garbage from them and took a lot of complaining and things of that nature. Hamibliyin kvarim b'Mitzrayim. Are there not enough graves in Egypt? Which he heard all the complaints. And now the Ksav HaKabbalah points out there's some other places where you have a similar idea.
But like he's sending the message only to Moshe, not to Klal Yisrael. It should really be, really Klal Yisrael needed the message more.
You're saying Klal Yisrael thought that Moshe Rabbeinu really did it. He thought he really did it. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Interesting point. For us, though, we get the message. The rest of us get the message. Umatzanu l'razal kama mamor miskasna l'nidu nidan. He has some other examples of this. And now you can understand them with what I just explained to you. Like the Gemara says in Megillah Dafid Gimel, this is also very interesting. This is on the other end of things. Megillah, Purim's coming up. Purim's coming up. So you have over there, same thing, right? If you look in the Megillah, which I believe you have over here in the Chumash also. So it may be helpful to look inside the Pasuk. So, right at the beginning of the Megillah.
613.
What page you got? 613? Look at that. Ish Yehudi haya b'shushan habira u'shmo Mordechai ben Yair, 614. Yair ben, Shmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish ishimini. Now look at the next pasuk. Asher haglam Yerushalayim Mordechai was exiled from Jerusalem. Im hagola asher haglisa, with the exile that was exiled im Yechaniah Melech Yehuda. So from that part of the pasuk, it sounds like, how was he put into exile? By himself. He went into exile with Yechaniah. Who caused him to go into exile? It doesn't say. It's asher hagla. Hagla means he was exiled. Who put him into exile? It doesn't say. What's the next pasuk? The next words? Asher hegla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel. So the pasuk could have just easily have said that he was put into exile by Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel. But what does it know? It says he was exiled from Jerusalem with the exile that was exiled with Yechaniah. And who did that? Asher hegla. And he was exiled by Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel. Why the repetition of hegla, hegla twice? So the Ksav HaKabbalah says the same thing. Just like when it comes to doing good things, we think we're doing it, but it's really Hashem's doing it. So too, when bad things happen to us, so we think, you know, we may be doing things, but it's actually Hashem doing it. Let's see what he says. Asher haglami Yushalayim shegala me'atzmo. Apparently Rashi Maseches Megillah, I didn't look it up, but I'll trust him. He says, Rashi and Megillah says, Asher haglami Yushalayim shegala me'atzmo, that Mordechai left Jerusalem on his own. Ve'ikar adrasha b'avur shahamigaleh, the one who sent him into Galus, ksiv b'kara behedra, it says it explicitly, Asher hagla Nebuchadnezzar. Lachain asher hagla l'drasha. So the extra asher hagla is for a drasha that Mordechai left on his own. Uvialkin mavur kitrei galus havi. In the Medrash it says that that Mordechai was exiled twice. Uvagalus harishona kishehagla Nebuchadnezzar as Yechaniah hamelach yatzu imo kol ha, I don't know what that means, chorim v'hasarim. So Mordechai went out also. Lachain gam asher haglasa me'atzmo. Ki ein hevdel b'tam bein heglo bein heglasa elish is elish and zachar v'elish and akeva. The Rava denakat hegla v'hu adin haglasa. Mordechai shavli Yushalayim. Mordechai went back to Jerusalem after being exiled. V'gala shenis imagalas achron ki mavur sham. And then he was exiled again. Uzos dikdek hakasav asher hegla v'lo'amar asher haya im hagola lo'amar asher hegla kvar v'shav v'hegla shenis. He was exiled once, and then he was exiled the second time. Rav Wolf Heidenheim. He quotes from his famous friend, who's famous to us only, the grammarian Rav Wolf Heidenheim. Ayin mash kasafti leil b'vahasne, and then it will call. I looked it up, what he said over there. I didn't understand what he's talking about. Ulekamon ba'acharei mos b'yo'amad chai. Again, I know he's talking about that. These are all passive languages. Yo'amad, it will stand by itself. So, interesting. So, here he quotes the Yalkut, who says that the repetition of the word hagla means that Mordechai was exiled twice. Mordechai was so connected to Yerushalayim that after he was exiled once, he couldn't bear the exile. He ran back to hang out in Yerushalayim, and then he got exiled again. But according to the words that we were saying before, and I think the Ksav HaKabbalah may be hinting to this in his first explanation, Shagola Me'atzmo. Rashi says Shagola Me'atzmo. So the perhaps the lesson for us is not just that Mordechai was exiled twice, but even though it was Nebuchadnezzar who exiled him, but Shagola Me'atzmo, it was really the actions of the Jewish people themselves. Nebuchadnezzar might have been the shliach of the Ribbono Shel Olam who exiled them, but in fact, shegala me'atzmo. The idea is that the gullus that happened to Klal Yisrael, it happened not because of Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar was the shliach of Hashem to do it, but actually, it happened by itself. It happened by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Don't blame Nebuchadnezzar for our gullus. It's our fault that we were in gullus. It was gala me'atzmo. It was for us ourselves. We brought it on ourselves. When travails happened to us, even when the nations of the world persecute us, perhaps the intention of Rashi here is, yeah, yes, of course, it's true that we don't want them to be the agents of our bad fortune. But in the reality, we believe very strongly that our fortune is up to us. It's the way that we behave that causes our fortune. And we wouldn't have had a Churban HaBayis if we... You can't just blame it on Nebuchadnezzar. Oh, he was an idiot. He was a bad guy. He was a terrible person. He caused us to leave. No. The Gemara in Megillah is stressing, Asher Hagla Yerushalayim Me'atzmo Shegala Me'atzmo, that Mordechai left on his own. We Klal Yisrael left on our own. It was our fault. It was the things that we did to bring about the Golus. Even though it was Hegla Nebuchadnezzar, it just looked like Nebuchadnezzar was doing it, but in reality, it was us doing it to ourselves. And I think that that's a very, very important mindset to have in life, especially when we talk about the nations of the world. You know, we could lament the story with the Arabs, and we lament it. We lament the Arabs hate us, they want to kill us, they want to destroy us, many of them. Many of them, yeah, I was going to get to that, yeah. I'm not such a big politics guy, Herbie. I'm not a big politics guy. But what I'm saying is that we got to take care of our own business. If we do what we're supposed to do, we trust and believe and hope and pray that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do what he's got to do. I don't mean that we can't speak out about these things. Of course, we should speak out when there's hatred against us. Obviously, we have to speak out. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be these people who determine our fate. It's going to be our actions that determine our fate. It's going to be our tefillah, our ma'asim tovim, our mitzvos, our keeping Shabbos the right way, our growth in Torah, mitzvahs, and Yiras Shamayim that's going to carry the day. And I think that's the idea of both of these ideas. Both of Hukam HaMishkan by itself, even though it looked like Moshe was doing it happen by itself, and Nebuchadnezzar on the negative side, the Golus happened also by itself. Yeah. It's not. It wasn't Nebuchadnezzar who did it. Sure.
No.
It's a free country.
Really? You want to yeshiva? No. I thought you were going in a different direction with that. I thought you were going in a direction of, or Sabbath Kabbalah was going in a direction of, you know, that just like in good, Hashem, and I thought you were touching on that, that the Hashem, even in good times, you know, we have to remember who builds everything, who does it's coming to Hashem's hands, but even in the bad times, you can't fight that horrific, you know, of sending everybody to Bavel and fight it. He sent the whole, you know, whatever numbers it was, whatever, it's complex, how many people, this, that. And even in our own world, you know, when you lose somebody, and you know, you fight that. It's horrific. You know, the life that brings upon us horrific things. But Hashem that brings the horrific, and you have to remember there's a reason for it.
100%. I mean, that's part of it also.
That he was going in with the two.
Yeah. I think that's part. That's definitely part of it also. Definitely part of it also.
You know, you have to say Kaddish to try to, you know, remember that even in the bad times, that's what heals us.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that as well.
Very strong reinforcement for the Ketav and Kabbalah. There are only three people. There might be one more. I remember three that are called Eben Hashem: Moshe, David, and Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, Eben, right. He's certainly a shliach. There's Gemara. The Gemara's talk about Nebuchadnezzar. He and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had conversations about this. The Gemara, very interesting Gemara's. Now, the next piece is not. There's something strange about the next piece. It's not the Ksav HaKabbalah. I could have sworn that last week I saw this in the Ksav HaKabbalah, but it could be I saw it somewhere else. So it's really. I thought it was the Ksav HaKabbalah. So again, here when we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, that's what you get. But it's the second pasuk in the parasha. Take a look. It's a very beautiful idea. That it is. It's interesting. Who are the two main builders of the Mishkan? So you have Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur Lamata Yehuda. So Bezalel was from the tribe of Yehuda. Then the next pasuk, I saw this somewhere else. I thought it was like Sabbath. Ve'ito Ahaliyah ben Achisamach Lamate Dun. He was from the tribe of Dun. Dun was a child of the Shvachos, right? One of the maidservants. And you have these two people, and one is from the royalty of the Jewish people, Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda, and one is from the lowest of the lowly of the tribes, and they're both mentioned, mamish, right next to each other. They both had, I mean, I don't know if it was equal, maybe Bezalel was the leader, but Ve'ito, it says right away, Ve'ito Ahaliyav ben Achisamach, and I saw somebody say this, and I couldn't find I couldn't find it. Somebody says it's not my own idea, but the idea here is that when it comes to leadership and success in the Jewish community, your yichus doesn't matter. Your yichus doesn't matter. That's not something that is a predictor of success in Yiddishkeit. Here you have the two people who are doing arguably the most important job in the whole history of the Jewish people, building the Mishkan, taking Har Sinai with you, building the Mishkan, having that permanent Beis HaMikdash, which now is reflected in shuls and yeshivas and batei medrash throughout the world. Who are the architects? So you had Bezalel. So we get it why Bezalel was there. He's from the Mate Yehuda. He was from the royalty. But Aliyah was from, Dun was the Ma'asef L'chala Machnos. It was the last of the tribes to travel. Dun's mommy was one of the maidservants. Dun didn't come from the heavy lineage, and yet the two of them are mentioned in the same breath in the Torah as being the two people who were the primary leaders, craftsmen, builders of the Mishkan. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that it doesn't matter in Yiddishkeit where you come from. We don't care where you come from. We care, what do you do? What actions did you do to show your worthiness? It's not about who your parents were, who your grandparents were, or where you came from. Show me what you did. And the Torah, and Torah study, and Torah growth, and Torah greatness, and religious greatness is open up to anyone who's a Jew. Doesn't matter where you came from. It's open for anybody. You can be a zero, come from nothing, and achieve the greatest heights of the exalted, most respected place in Yiddishkeit. Doesn't matter where you came from. I paid a shiva call last night to someone. I didn't even know the story. It was just one of my college professors passed away. I didn't even know the story. And from the age of four, I didn't know that my college professor, not a regular guy. He was a great professor, taught me how to write. Great professor. From age four until age 12, I didn't know. He was living in Holland by himself from age four to age 12, no parents, with a Christian woman who, you know, hit him in Holland during the Holocaust. Not, didn't hit him in that sense, but this woman like had kids always coming in and coming out. They had a farm and there was always people volunteering. And she had this arrangement that people would live by her and they would work by her and she would provide food for them. So another Jewish kid, nobody noticed and recognized. And the guy, that he didn't have parents. His parents sent him on a train when he was 4.5 years old by himself on a train from like Germany to Holland. Plus, it was going to be safer for them. There's some relative was supposed to meet him, a 4.5-year-old kid on the train by himself. Knew nobody on the train. Like you see people, and now his son is a Rosh Hashiva. You know, it's like he came from absolutely nothing. Came to America with zero money. Again, then he met his parents later. He met his parents, you know, afterwards. He was separated from his parents for 8 years, and he met them afterwards in London. Met his parents, and they came to America. I had no idea the whole story. The guy was just my college professor, regular guy, nice guy. Professor Leo Taubes, you know, Professor Taubes at YU, the sea monster, right? I used to call him the sea monster. So he was Nifter. He taught me how to write. His son is a Rosh Shiva, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. You see people, his son was telling me, he came to YU in like the 50s and 60s, and he had nothing. And YU in those days, it wasn't just a school. He said, we've been to YU for a lot of years. You like to make fun of the place. It's like that's one of the things that people go to YU think it's like a rite of passage. You could just trash the place all the time and make fun of the place and talk about how terrible the place is and it's so expensive and this is the problem. He said in the 50s and 60s, when they took people in, they literally provided food for them. They provided clothing for them. They provided a place for them to live. This is like people came over after the Holocaust. They had mamish, nothing. And he told me that Rabbi Willig, my Rabbi Mordechai Willig, told him that his father, Rabbi Willig just paid a shiva call to him a few minutes before I was there, and he said that his father was in charge in YU of giving out the suits before Yontif to the people who didn't have a suit for Yontif. They used to give out. So the idea here is that in Judaism there's no elitism, there's no hierarchy. Yeah, it's true. There's Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael. If you want to be a Kohen, you can't be a Kohen. You want to try all you. We want to do. I've voted on the Beis HaMikdash. We can try all you want. So that's the one place where you do. It's actually this parasha. We're talking about the hierarchy, but when it comes to Torah and success in Yiddishkeit and Torah leadership and Torah success, yichus is not. It could be helpful. It could be helpful, but at the end of the day, that's not what carries the day. And I saw somebody say this, and I'm 99% sure it was the Ksava Kabbalah, so I couldn't find it this week where he said it. So I just included that anyway, because it was a slow week anyway. So, okay, what are we going to do now for the end? Oh, so we're going to cut, let's cut to the chase at the end. Oh, let's cut to the chase at the end. So in honor of Rosh Chodesh Adar, so... Of course, it was a slow week, and in honor of Rosh Chodesh Adar, I'm going to share with you also a beautiful idea that is not from the Ksava Kabbalah, but I saw it last night. Someone sent this to me from, there's a Mashpi in Eretz Yisrael, a very holy, holy Jew, very special Jew, very down to earth, very, very down to earth, special, special holy Jew. His name is Rav Melech Biederman. I don't know if you heard of his name. Rav Melech Biederman, he's really very special. Get his stuff every week. He has stuff. He sends out stuff in English every week, like 20 pages of very, very down to earth.
You got to get the videos. Right?
You know, this came from the video. So maybe you'll. Anyway, this is in honor of Rosh Chodesh Adar. So it says in the Megillah, in honor of Rosh Chodesh Adar, it says in the Megillah, Ein Esther Magedes Es Amaves Moladatos. So Esther was in the house of Achashverosh for years and years. Can you imagine being married to somebody for a bunch of years and she doesn't tell you that she's Jewish? She doesn't tell you where she's coming from. She doesn't tell you where she was born. Every time you start having discussions, how'd you grow up? She changes the subject. That's not a recipe for a great marriage. Not that Achashverosh and Esther had the greatest marriage, but Chlal, it says she apparently didn't see each other for 30 days, things like that. It wasn't such a great marriage. But how in the world did Esther survive all those days? So what does it say in the Megillah? Why didn't Esther tell Ahasuerus? Ki Mordechai tivsala shelo sagid. Because Mordechai commanded her, don't tell Ahasuerus where you came from. So Rav Biederman quoted a vart from Rav Buzner, like, really? Like, just because Mordechai, how did Mordechai succeed in convincing Esther in all the conversations, all the deep, meaningful conversations, all the DMCs that Esther and Achashverosh had. And, so how did she succeed in not spilling the beans? Just because Mordechai told her not to do it, like that was enough for her, like in all the conversations that they had? So he quoted a revart from Rav Vosner. How did Mordechai do it? So it says in the next pasuk in the Megillah, every day Mordechai would go past the king's palace, Ladas es Shlom Esther, to try to find out how Esther was doing, and what was happening with her. So Rav Vosner says Mordechai was a very, very brilliant mechanech. He was a very brilliant parent. He was a very brilliant teacher. Some say Esther was Mordechai's daughter. Some say Esther was Mordechai's wife, his niece. But anyway, we know that Mordechai had a big part in Esther's life, right? So, how did Mordechai convince Esther not to do it? Not by saying to her every day, you must not tell. If he would have said that to her, she would have ignored him. Rather, what did he do? He passed by to say, Ladas es Shlom Esther, to see how is she doing? How's everything going? Umay Yaseba, what's going on with you? Is everything okay? How you doing? Because that's the atmosphere. There was a warm, beautiful atmosphere that Mordechai had with Esther. So because of that, she listened to him. Not because every day he said, you better not tell. Because Ladas es Shlom Esther, Umay Yaseba. So he told a story from one of the Lubavitcher Rebbes. I think it was one of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbes told the following story. There was a rich guy, a wealthy guy, who used to go to the Schwitz. Wealthy guy used to go sit in the Schwitz. And some other guy is watching this big wealthy guy in the Schwitz. I don't know if he was watching him in the Schwitz, and it's hot, and there's steam and heat going on in the Schwitz and hot. And apparently, I don't know, I'm not a Schwitz guy. I've never gone to the Schwitz. But apparently, I don't know, you said that the minute they had the Schwitz, they used to hit them.
Yep.
Is that what they used to do in the Schwitz? They used to hit people?
They still do.
In Russia. They hit you. They hit you, and it's great. You love it. So this guy's watching this guy in the Schwitz, And it's hot, hot. He's saying, oh, it's beautiful, the streets. And they're smacking him and smacking him and smacking him. And then at the end, this guy, he pays a lot of money for this. He says, I have an idea. So after this, he follows the rich guy home. He figures he has a new idea how to make money. So he knocks on the door. The rich guy opens the door. He starts beating the daylights out of the guy. He says, what are you doing? What are you doing? He's beating him. He says, now pay me money. I just saw you went to the Schwitz and they beat you and you paid him money afterwards. He says, idiot. When I was sitting in the Schwitz with the sauna, so it's there's heat and it's I feel so great and I'm in such a great mood because I got the heat happening in the Schwitz. So then when you beat me, it feels good. When you're in a Schwitz and you beat me, it feels good. Like this, you come to my house and there's no Schwitz and you're hitting me, that's going to feel, that doesn't make me feel good. That makes me feel beaten up. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe said that the idea is that when you're in a place of warmth and sweetness and heat, so even when you get beat, even when you get clapped, it feels good. Even when someone's hitting you over the head, but since it's such a warm, sweet, pleasant atmosphere, even when you get hit, it feels good. So he says that's the same way with raising children, the same way that Mordechai and Esther had the same thing. That if you raise kids in a very warm, sweet, beautiful, healthy, wonderful, positive environment, so when you sometimes have to tell them, no, you can't do this, or you sometimes have to give them consequences or punish them, but they'll take it. They'll take it in a positive way because they know you love them, they know you care about them, they know it's a very warm, positive atmosphere. So that's how Mordechai succeeded in telling Esther, don't do it, because b'chol yom v'yom Mordechai misalech l'fnei chatzar beis hamelech l'adas es shlom Esther or my Yesla. Since Esther knew that Mordechai was someone who always cared about her welfare and always was warm and caring and sweet and supportive to her, so when he said, don't do this, she was willing to listen to him because it was like taking the makas in the Schwitz. That was a vort from a Melch Bredeman. So whether you like the details of it, I think it's a beautiful idea that when a person provides, it's also connected to another thing. I mean, I don't want to give it away. Maybe talk about that at the dinner. We'll hope to see everybody at the Hal dinner, Motzei Shabbos. But we'll talk about that a little bit. When you provide a positive, warm, nurturing, caring atmosphere, then you can get away with telling people. That's very much the philosophy of our yeshiva over here. Very much the philosophy of our yeshiva. How do you get kids to get high school kids to do what they're supposed to do? You kidding me? To get high school kids, high school boys, I don't know about girls. I know nothing about girls. But to get high school boys to do what they're supposed to do, how do you get them to do so? It's got to be that they know you care about them. You know that you have to provide a warm, nurturing, caring, loving, and enjoyable environment. And then if you have to smack them a little bit, not literally, but you have to give them some toughness, some discipline, some structure. Don't tell the king who you are. Mordechai tzivs Allah. Show us again. How do you get a kid to listen to your commandment? It's got to be when there's an atmosphere of warmth and caring and positive. Or like somebody else said, we'll close with this joke. Okay, you're going to like this joke. We'll close with a joke. I also heard this from a Melech Biederman. A joke from a Melech Biederman. Ready? Here's the closing joke from a Melech Biederman. A kid, Nebuch in Bnei Brak, so one family, they once had a kid who swallowed a coin. And the kid's like gasping, he swallowed a coin. So in Bnei Brak, if you and I happened, we'd take him to a doctor. But in Bnei Brak, they took him to the Chazon Ish. Help me, Rebbe, my son swallowed a coin. Chazon Ish sees the kid is starting to turn blue. So the Chazon Ish says, no, go take the kid quickly to the Panovitcher Rav. Because the Panovitcher Rav is the world's best fundraiser. He knows how to get money out of people. So everyone's standing around there. Everyone breaks out laughing at the joke of the Chazon Ish. Everyone's laughing. And the kid starts laughing because everyone's laughing. And the kid's laughing so hard, the money comes out of the kid's throat. So Biederman says, what's the lesson from this? The lesson is that simcha can help you with a lot of problems. The kid had no idea why he was laughing. He didn't understand the joke. He saw everybody else was laughing. So he started laughing, and then the money came out. So the lesson is that when you have a lot of simcha, so this year we have double Adar. You have Mishenichnas Adar, Marvim Simcha. The more simcha there is, we have double Adar, Rosh Chodesh Adar, the more simcha you have, simcha can put away a lot of tzaras. When you have a lot of problems, if you have a lot of simcha, even if there's issues, there's concerns, the simcha can override the tzaras. So hopefully we should take advantage of the double Adar. and be even extra simcha, have extra simcha, and hopefully the extra simcha should help cloud away a lot of the difficulties. There's a lot of people going through a lot of difficulties now. And Bez Hashem, the main thing is, as we leave Pashas Truma Tetzah, Vekisisa Vayaka Pekudei, we have the end of the Mishkan. We should hope for that time where we'll once again be able to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and we should have, even though the Chazal say the third Beis HaMikdash is not going to be us, it's going to come down min HaShamayim. That's what some people say. But ultimately, we know it's our actions that are going to rebuild or not rebuild it. It'll be Huka Me'elav, but it's going to be our actions that are going to take the door. Hopefully, we should be zochet to see that day. Have a wonderful Shabbos.